Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and David Bartke here. It's Thursday, June 8th, and once again, time again to do the Law of Attraction here on PRN and on our podcast and all our listeners in iTunes Store and everywhere else. We are going to start doing something that Joel Nelson and I started in April before his commitments took him away, and we weren't able to finish it. David, we actually did one episode on The Secret.
Oh, nice.
And we never finished it. We did Think and Grow Rich. We did the whole book, Think and Grow Rich. That was wonderful. We said, well, let's do it with The Secret. And then, our partnership fell apart. So,
So you and
I figured, well, let's see if we can, pick up where we left off last time. Actually, let's pick up at the beginning because you kind of have to do it from the beginning. And
all right. And just so people know who I am and why I'm on this call is that I'm a certified and a very experienced Law of Attraction life coach. So that's how I fit into all this.
Oh, absolutely. Otherwise, I wouldn't make you my co-host. You got to have
exactly,
the background, for goodness sake.
I just wanted people who are listening to know who I am.
Well, that's absolutely fair. So
yeah.
The Secret. The Secret came out, 2007, I think it came out? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it pretty much took the world by storm. There were large chunks of worldwide population that just really bought into it. There were perhaps even larger chunks that said, well, that's a bunch of hooey. And there were a smaller number of people who ignored it, but it was pretty big. In fact, if I remember correctly, Rhonda Byrne, who was the producer of The Secret, I believe she grossed somewhere around $300 million off of it. So it was a pretty successful movie, as these things go.
Wow. Yes, yes.
And, of course, published the book that was basically a transcription of the movie when you really come down to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has a few small variations, but it's essentially the same thing. And obviously, we're going to be working off the book because that way we can read it. It's kind of hard to read the video when you're watching the video.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's start off with chapter one. Chapter one, that's what we'll do this week, The Secret Revealed. And the movie starts off and the book starts off with a whole bunch of quotes from many of the people who are presenters in the movie, and they're basically, what they're doing? They're teasing us. They're teasing us with all these wonderful things that the secret is going to reveal to us, and in very generic and abstract terms, but they sound so cool. Bob Proctor saying the secret gives you anything you want: happiness, wealth, health. Joe Vital says you can have, do, or be anything you want, and it sounds like great pie in the sky. But
yeah,
it's also a good way to get you to listen and say, okay, so what's this big secret they're building up to here?
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, honestly, when I first saw The Secret, when I first came on, my skepticism barrier, I guess you might call it, popped right into place. I said, oh, it's one of these things. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What was your reaction when you first saw it?
Well, I just was immediately into it because I was actually lucky enough to actually study under one of the people involved with The Secret, way before they did The Secret.
Oh, okay. So you actually had like a heads up before it even got out there.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, and it was with Michael Beckwith, and he has this wonderful agape service in L.A., and I was living in L.A. at the time, and he just does these amazing sermons. I mean, talking about like raised vibration and all that kind of thing. By the time you listen to a sermon, you're just like, woo, like I can do anything. Anything can happen. So he had a bunch of classes that he taught at the time, and I took all of them. So I was, it wasn't that foreign to me. So I was just like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Great. More Law of Attraction information.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me.
Filling in your education. What did you think, though, the first time that you heard Beckwith?
The very first time, I was like, wow. Because someone had told me, oh, you got to go to hear this guy, Michael Beckwith, at his agape service. And I'm like, it was a friend of mine who I really trusted. I'm like, okay. And they said, oh, you got to go. It's amazing. So I went, and he was amazing. And I was like, wow. I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but I just feel amazing after hearing him talk. And I just related to it.
So you could actually physically feel an increase in your vibration level, and you could feel an energy level.
Totally. Yes, totally. Totally.
Yeah, I could see how that would really sell me. If I had had that, when I was watching The Secret, I wasn't getting this big vibrational increase. But I can see if you're in an atmosphere where you're just feeling a physical increase, you may not know what the heck it's all about, but you can definitely notice it.
Yes, and everything he said, like, maybe I didn't fully understand it, but I understood enough at the time where it just resonated with me, and the way he talked and preached, and you really, I mean, I'm sure everyone in there, that's why he became so popular, just felt that, like, raise in vibration, and like, wow, yes, 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 keep it coming, yes, you know. So, and then I started going weekly to his service, and which was really interesting because when I first started going, it wasn't that big of a group. And each week, more people came, and then more people came, and then word was spreading.
Oh, sure.
And it got so big, he had to move to, like, this huge place. And then even that, like, to go to the service, if he didn't get there early, the line would be huge to get in.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Well, it shows what word of mouth can do. I mean, word of mouth is powerful.
Yes, yes. And just, you know, when you have that gift of raising a large group of people's vibrations at once, people want that, and people tell other people about it, and they want to experience it.
It's almost like a natural form of morphine or something. Get your excitement level up. And actually,
yeah,
it is when you think about it, because science has already, over the last 30, 40 years or so, has identified things like endorphins and serotonin and dopamine
and so forth,
which are the chemicals that get involved whenever we're feeling up, when our vibration level is raised. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. And then plus, I started seeing and feeling improvement in my life from going to his services and taking his classes and absorbing the information. So I'm like, there's definitely something to all this, because not only am I feeling amazing, I'm starting to attract things that I really wanted to have happen, and it's happening.
Yeah.
so something's working about it, you know?
Now, when Rhonda Byrne starts the movie off, she basically starts by saying, "A year ago, my life had collapsed around me. I worked myself into exhaustion. My father died suddenly. My relationships with my work colleagues and loved ones were in turmoil. And out of my greatest despair came the greatest gift," because her daughter gave her a copy of a book that presented this idea that she had never been exposed to before. And she started doing the research, and she lists a whole bunch of people from history who she identifies as being early practitioners of what she calls The Secret. You know, the list includes
mm-hmm.
people like William Shakespeare, Robert Browning, William Blake, Ludwig von Beethoven, Leonardo da Vinci, Socrates, Plato, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Pythagoras, Sir Francis Bacon, Sir Isaac Newton, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, Victor Hugo. I mean, that's quite a diverse and eclectic list right there.
Wow, absolutely. I wish she had put why. That would be interesting. Like, well, you know, this person I feel was in on it because this reason, and this person for this reason.
Yeah, I remember hearing the list, and I remember feeling on the one hand, well, okay, those are some pretty good names. Where's the evidence?
Yeah,
I'd love
yeah,
to see the
yeah.
evidence, and I can't honestly say
exactly.
I can't say I've done the research to find out what the evidence was.
Yeah,
I mean, some of it I can kind of sort of see. For instance, Da Vinci, he's already associated with a number of ahead of his time things anyway. So yeah, I could kind of see where, you know, he would perhaps have bought into this idea on some level, but I still don't know where she found it in his work that showed he actually
yeah.
did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it would be cool to discover that. That might be something to look into sometime. And I have to say, that is one of my criticisms of The Secret. I would love to see her do less of the excitement building in order to spend a little more time presenting the evidence. Because evidence itself
yeah,
can
I agree.
Also be
yeah.
excitement building. You don't have to do it just
oh,
based
absolutely.
On hype, you know?
Yes, totally. And then people can say, oh, there's the evidence. Yes, that makes sense.
You'd probably end up with a lot less criticism, too. A lot of less people saying, oh, you know, that's just a bunch of hooey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, hey, the fact that she put it out there is still good. So, you know, we'll give her credit for that. So,
yeah.
So when I'm giving criticisms, it doesn't mean that I don't like The Secret. It just means I think there are a few areas where she could have done a little bit better.
Yeah. that makes sense. Yes.
Now, the other thing that's really cool is she is Australian. She was an Australian TV producer, which is how she had access to, you know, teams of videographers and so forth that she could bring together to do this whole project of building the movie called The Secret. But she also was smart enough to realize through her research that most of the practitioners of what she called The Secret were in the U.S. So she moved to the U.S. with her team in order to track them down, mm-hmm. and find them and video them. And I'm glad she did, because by doing that, she introduced me to some people who are now among my favorites.
Yep.
I mean, probably the only one I already knew was Jack Canfield, who was the author of the Chicken Soup series of books.
Yes.
I was aware of him. I didn't really know any of the others.
Same here, yeah, except for Michael.
You knew Michael Beckwith. Yeah, I never heard of Michael Beckwith. But one of my favorites that she introduced me to was Mike Dooley, who in the movie says thoughts become things. He basically lays it down, mm-hmm. into like three words. And there was something about Mike. I mean, he's a very exuberant personality anyway. You can just tell he's just, mm-hmm. full of happy energy. You know? But it's also, I mean, when I was, after I had seen the movie and had digested it for a year or two and read the book, I wanted more. I wanted to understand better what was going on with it. I wanted to fill in some of the gaps that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And so I was looking out on the net trying to find what some of these presenters had done on their own. And the stuff that Mike Dooley did was spot on. I loved his stuff.
Yeah.
So I was really grateful that The Secret introduced me to Mike Dooley. And there were so many others that you could draw upon. Interesting side note, and we try to stay positive in this show, but I feel like I have to throw this one in. This is important.
Okay.
Rhonda Byrne and some of her presenters and the guy who was basically her director of videography and the guy who did her social media promotion that helped spiral the thing out of control. A number of them have a bitter taste in their mouths today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you know why? Like, what happened?
Well, a lot of it we can only surmise because there were lawsuits.
Right.
And I've actually spoken to the guy who built up the social media site. I had a conversation with him by phone one time. And he couldn't tell me as much as he wanted to tell me because of the way those suits were settled. They were settled with court orders that you can't discuss certain things. You know, so but it was very clear. His name was Dan Hollings. It's very clear from what my conversation with Dan was that there was a lot going on that we didn't know about. And while he couldn't tell me any of it, I picked up just through inference a couple of ideas on where to look. And one of the things I found was an article in an Australian magazine called, not surprisingly, The Australian, which is kind of Australia's version of Time or Life or something like that. It's a major publication. And there's an article, it's still online, you can still track it down, that talks about Rhonda Byrne and how her phenomenal success with The Secret came at a price, at a cost to the people who helped her. And it goes into a lot more detail than Hollings was able, because he was literally judicially prescribed from talking. But the magazine wasn't judicially prescribed. So if you want to find out what the negative side was, some of it's pretty bad. I mean, a couple of them, John Assaroff, one of the presenters, ended up being convicted of manslaughter because he tried to take the teachings too far and forcing people to do things that he really shouldn't have been forcing them to do.
God.
He actually ended up killing people.
Yeah.
Other people who were Dan Hollings hinted, he wouldn't say who, he hinted that some of the presenters were actually frauds, that what they claimed they were done, not actually done. Yeah, so there is that.
Well,
side.
I know, and I think I had told you this on the phone the other day, was I had heard Esther Hicks talk about The Secret.
Oh, yeah.
And because, you know, anyone who's into Law of Attraction probably knows about Abraham and Esther Hicks. And they were originally asked to be part of it, and originally they were going to be part of it. And then, without disclosing what, she said, as time went on, it started becoming different than they had originally been told it was going to be. And as a result, she backed out of the whole thing.
Yeah, there's actually a version of The Secret that includes Esther Hicks.
Yes.
You can actually find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I heard that before. Yeah, it's a little difficult to find.
Yeah, very difficult to find. It took me a long time, and I'm good at searching.
But, yeah, so there was definitely some behind-the-scenes drama, but it still was great that it came out because it just made people, the public in general, became much more aware of Law of Attraction.
And you're right. Once you discover the secret and the Law of Attraction, if you are drawn into it, if you aren't turned off by it, within a year or two, you're going to find Abraham Hicks. It's almost a certainty. if you've explored one and you're into it, you're going to find the other one.
Yes,
so
for
Abraham
sure.
Hicks actually benefited tremendously well from The Secret.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Yep.
And
a lot of people. There were other people that just wrote Law of Attraction books that were not involved with The Secret, but because of The Secret, suddenly their books were selling like hotcakes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So there was a lot of good trickle effect just from that as well.
That would have been a nice trickle to be part of.
I know. Unfortunately, my books weren't out yet, but that would have been nice, yes.
But, okay, so we've done the negative side. We can go back to the positive side now.
Okay, good.
We can leave the dark side of the force. One of the things that they do early on it's Bob Proctor who identifies what the secret is. The secret is the Law of Attraction, and then they describe what the Law of Attraction is, and they discuss that a bit. And pretty quickly, pretty early on, they start addressing the question of why is it that people don't always seem to get what they're thinking about? Why is it that the Law of Attraction doesn't seem to work for some people? And I got to give them credit. They dove into that fairly early in the process. One of the things they did to try to address that, how do I describe that? It sounds like a good explanation at first on the surface. But when you look at it more deeply, you realize that they oversimplified. Because what they said was, you want to avoid thinking about things in terms of negation. So, and that if you use negation, the universe ignores it. So they say, if you say, I don't want to spill something on this outfit, it's as if you say, I want to spill something on this outfit and I want to spill more things.
Yeah.
The problem that I have with that is that it isn't the negation. It's the negative vibration. It's the low level of vibration that's doing it because you're focusing on bad stuff. So it isn't that you're actually saying,
I think it was possibly said like that to make it sound easier to the general person. Because some people that don't know about vibrations and all that kind of thing might not get it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why it was.
It also created
a problem for me because it confused me. Because I tried, I tried to apply the rule universally, and I found that it didn't always apply the way they wrote it. What I needed to understand was it's the feeling associated with the negative stuff that you're talking about. That's what's doing it.
Yeah.
And they actually do touch on that, but you have to wait till like chapter 4 or 5 before you get there.
Yeah.
Well, it would have been helpful for me if they had touched on it in chapter 1, but that's okay.
That's interesting because the type of coaching I do is phone coaching, so I get a lot of calls from potential clients, and they've watched The Secret or read The Secret, and they resonate with it, but they don't know what to do to get Law of Attraction to work in their favor. Mm-hmm. So I always found that interesting, like that they watch The Secret and read it, but they still don't know what to do. So maybe that's part of what you're talking about.
Yeah, the practical application is touched on, but it's not really laid out, I don't think. And I think part of it is because whenever we're presented with something, anything, doesn't matter what it is, that seems a little otherworldly, a little bit, out there. We have our skepticism thing in the way, right? Our little barrier, little protection barrier. And so how could this be real,
Yes.
And in order to get around that little protection barrier, that skepticism, you need to have a feeling that your feet are firmly on the ground, that you're actually dealing with reality, which is in the long run, as you look at how the Law of Attraction actually works, that's really kind of naive. because reality ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Exactly. And the more we focus on reality, the more we're keeping that the same.
But nevertheless, when we first approach it, we need to have that real basis. You know?
Yeah.
And that's
what
I think they actually needed to spend a little more time on, helping provide a real basis for it. So, I mean, they tried. I'll give Rhonda and her team credit. They tried by taking this thing, this approach about avoiding the negation words in what you say. What was missing from that, and the reason that it would not tend to work for me and for others who got tripped up on it, was, yes, you can turn your words around. Instead of saying, I don't want to spill something on this outfit, you can say something like, I'm going to keep this outfit clean. And that helps. But if you're saying that in such a way, and this is where most of us are starting from, if you're saying it in such a way that you're not really feeling it, you're faking it till you make it. Well, fake it till you make it is certainly a good technique to use, but you have to recognize that while you're faking it, you're not there yet.
Right.
You're not in that positive feeling space yet. So you can't expect it to just be working off the bat, but that's precisely what we expect. We expect it to work right off the bat.
Well, yes, there's that, plus there's momentum. Like, if we're all used to thinking a certain way for many, many, many years, then we can't just expect, boom, we're just going to suddenly think about what we want, and then there it is.
Right.
You have to build that up.
This is where I didn't like the build-up. The build-up was pie in the sky. And pie in the sky is pie in the sky because it sounds so easy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you just snap your fingers and wonderful things happen. So that kind of bugged me. And I think that's why it took me so long to learn how the law of attraction really works, first of all. And second of all, learn how to apply it. Learn how to turn it into real life. But again...
So what else does it say in chapter one?
But again, those are just criticisms. I mean, it's still, for the most part, the fact that they're presenting it at all is fantastic. So what else does it talk about?
Yeah, totally.
Well, one of the first introductions from Michael Beckwith is one of the first steps where you start to understand in a very early stage how it is that this thing, this concept that we're talking about, becomes a part of your life. He writes and says, creation is always happening. Every time an individual has a thought or a prolonged chronic way of thinking, they are in the creation process, and something is going to manifest out of those thoughts. Which I like, because he isn't saying I'm going to attract X.
Right.
He's saying if you have a thought pattern, something of some kind is going to emerge out of that thought pattern.
It's much less
specific. It's not like I'm going to cause this to happen. I'm going to cause X to happen. It's more like if I think about things of type Y, I'm going to get stuff of type Y happening. It's more generalized.
Yeah, so it makes it easier to understand as well.
It opens up the mind, too. It makes us realize that this isn't a one-to-one correlation. It's not like I'm driving by hitting the gas pedal and now the car is moving forward and I can always count on the car moving forward every time I hit the gas pedal. It's not quite that direct. So he's the one. Now, unfortunately, this is where a lot of critics also say this starts to become like mysticism. And I think it's a valid complaint, but it's also because of the way they set the thing up from the beginning. I would have liked a more realistic one. But anyway, I've been harping on that too much. Let's move on.
Okay.
He also says, again, this is Beckwith, you attract to you the predominant thoughts that you're holding in your awareness, whether those thoughts are conscious or unconscious. And that's the rub. This is where they start bringing in the idea that it's not just what you think about that's positive. It's what you think about that's negative. And it's not just what you think about consciously. It's what you think about unconsciously.
Yes.
And that's where this came to me pretty quickly watching The Secret, which was, wow, how do I control all those negative subconscious thoughts?
That's right, because it works both ways.
Yeah, that's a little bit mind-boggling. Because of this recognition that subconscious is just as important as conscious, that unconscious is just as important as conscious, we need to pay as much attention as we can to our unconscious minds. And I have to admit, I spent a lot of time over the last 10 years or so trying to learn exactly how to do that.
And what did you find?
It's been an ongoing step-by-step thing. It's not like I have had one great big aha moment. It's more like a lot of little aha moments. Probably the most recent one, I am currently reading a book by Dr. Candace Pert, who was a neuroscientist whose career started in the early 1970s. And she was the researcher who discovered the opiate neuroreceptor in the nervous system.
Wow.
And she also had some other later discoveries, too. She posits her own theory. The book is called Molecules and Emotions, and her theory is essentially that science needs to include emotions in its scientific explorations, even though emotions can't be measured, which is abhorrent to scientists. And she recognizes that it's abhorrent to scientists, but her research has shown her that the two are so inextricably connected that you can't talk about one without talking about the other.
Wow.
And
interesting.
In regard to what we're talking about here, her big observation, her big discovery, if you will, in this regard, is that the subconscious mind is the human body. It's not just some metaphor. It's not just some abstraction of, you know, some lower level of the brain or something like that. The body itself is the subconscious mind. And her evidence for that, because everything about her is evidentiary, her evidence is how memory is stored. Memory is not just stored in the mind, it turns out. Memory is stored in the form of peptides in the body in two different kinds of storage spaces, if you will. One space controls memory, and the other space controls, I can't remember what it is. There's a corollary to memory, and I just can't remember what it is. But the point is, this stuff is stored all over the body in various places. It's stored at the brainstem. It's stored at the base of your spine. It's stored all over the place, and all of it is stuff from our experience that has been stored in certain ways in the body using chemical storage, essentially. We are chemical hard drives. when we have somebody who has a repressed emotion, it simply means that it is a stored piece of stuff in peptide form somewhere in the body that our conscious mind refuses to connect to.
Wow. Did she say anything about, can that affect people's health?
Oh, absolutely, yes. In a huge way.
It seems like it would.
She does more than any other neuro researcher that I know of to draw scientific connections to what alternative medical practitioners, law of attraction practitioners, any of the woo-woo sciences. ties a lot. Unfortunately, she passed about 4 years ago. But while she was still alive, she was one of the few scientists who were willing to give talks to general audiences. Most scientists stay within their little scientific community, and
it's not just safe.
It's also there's a bit of snobbery there. They don't want to release their secrets. And part of it is because of the way science works today. She goes into a whole thing about this, and I won't spend a lot of time on it. But particularly in the 70s and 80s, and I gather it still is true to some extent today, science is an extremely competitive environment because the more kudos you get, the more citations you get, the more recognitions you get, more published papers that are published first and so forth, the more grant money you get, the better offers you get, and so forth. Especially when it was all the old boy network, and even today, it's a tremendously competitive environment. And in that environment, people want to hold their secrets. So when somebody goes out and starts preaching to the public about, you know, let's turn all this into the vernacular, a lot of scientists get their back up. They do not like that at all. And they're usually the ones who criticize the content of what is explained in that way the most, because they're so resistant to the idea that the general public should understand any of their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is sad, really. But credit to her, all credit to her, because she basically threw all that out the window, because she experienced the gender discrimination that occurred, because it was an old boy network. And yeah. she had a numerous yeah. instances where, I mean, she played that leading role in discovering the receptor for opiates within the body.
Wow.
She was there was a team, a group of researchers who were nominated for a top medical field prize called the Lasker, which is very similar to the Nobel.
Mm-hmm.
And she was one of the leading researchers to, you know, break the whole field open, and she was omitted from the list.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she became very early on a resistor and was actually blacklisted for quite some time within the scientific community.
Goodness.
Yeah, it's really something. It kind of makes sense.
Wow.
I mean, the 70s and 80s were very much a gender revolution time anyway. So this is just one more piece to that puzzle. But it also shows just how important it is to have the connections between science and general public. And it also shows that the few who have been willing to do it are truly heroes. She's one of the heroes. But to answer your question, there are numerous instances from her research and from her colleagues' research showing that there is definite connections, lots of definite connections between how we think and how we feel and so forth on the one hand, and what happens to us medically. Gigantic amounts of research supporting that.
Wow, and it makes sense.
It does.
Sense, yeah.
In fact, she even describes a conversation she had with Norman Cousins. You know who Norman Cousins is?
Yes, I've definitely heard
right.
Norman Cousins.
Yeah, Norman Cousins, he was a TV producer, but he was also famous because he cured his own cancer by watching Marx Brothers movies.
Amazing.
Long before any of that was considered to be even close to scientific. And his book, of course, was roundly criticized.
Of course. Yeah.
But it turns out he was right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uncomfortably so, but he was right.
Mm-hmm.
What you think about is what you attract. And so this is it's encouraging to those of us reading about The Secret or reading about the Law of Attraction now, because there is a lot of science behind it. I don't mean to imply that scientists back the Law of Attraction. Most do not. But the science itself backs it in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the encouraging thing.
But, doesn't that whole thing have to do also with the quantum physics that's proven like energy attracts like energy?
If you really want to get into a fist fight, say that to most quantum physicists, because most quantum physicists will just reject it outright. A bunch of woo-woo, it's a bunch of nonsense. It's just, they're just twisting and turning all the quantum physics.
That's what I've always heard.
They're just twisting quantum mechanics around to make it fit their woo-woo spiritualism. So even there's a lot of resistance.
Well, that's what I've heard. Yeah.
But I have to admit, for me, quantum mechanics makes a huge difference. Not so much – well, it's quantum mechanics, but it's more specifically the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Because when I first read about that, I had to read it twice. Wait a minute. A scientific experiment was done where they were observing stuff at a nuclear level, and they expected to find an electron in one place, but when they looked, it was in another place. But when they just left the equipment running without anybody watching and then just did some recording, it was back where it was supposed to be. So in other words, the observer influenced where the electron went just by observing.
Wow.
And when I read that, it took me a long time to even accept that the data was correct. Because think about what that implies. It suggests that – I mean, this is just – one experiment with one electron in one field under one electron microscope. If that's happening all the time, and there's no reason to believe that it isn't, if that data is true, then everything we think we know about physics is misleading. Because there's no such thing as objectivity anymore. Objectivity is now impossible. Because what's objectivity? It's separating yourself from the thing that you're observing so that you don't influence it. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
The act of observing influences it. Well, that means there's no such thing as objectivity. Objectivity is now impossible. I mean, that's mind-bending. And that, mm-hmm. that really upset my world when I first heard about that. But over time...
Yeah, it's a lot to grasp.
It's a lot. It's a huge amount to grasp. This whole concept that observation influences scientific study is... It basically reminds us that scientific study is only as good as the insight of the person who's the scientist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's critical. It also reinforces something. This is something else I've done a little study on lately. It reinforces what we know about healing, particularly where the placebo effect is concerned. I mean, the placebo effect, mm-hmm. scientists have basically for the longest time up until about 20, 30 years ago, they just kind of dismissed the placebo as something that doesn't really contribute anything to medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just sort of there, and you want to try to eliminate it from your scientific studies as much as you can so you can get published and, you know, get your stuff bought by the pharmaceuticals or whatever. But what we're learning in the last 20 to 30 years is that the placebo effect is huge. It's a gigantic thing. It's so big. There was one researcher I read who basically went through all the papers he could find and totaled up all the scores, so to speak, and found that the success rate of all the various things that he found papers on was, on average, about equal to the placebo rate.
Wow, amazing.
So in other words, if somebody finds something, odds are 50-50 that placebo will work just as well. Well, what's placebo? It's mind over matter. It's believing that, you know, this harmless, useless thing that you ingest is just as powerful as some amazing new medical cure.
Yes. Yep.
It's the power of positive thinking and positive suggestion.
Yeah, well, I've heard that as well with people that can feel like anxious. Like they'll give them just a placebo pill and they'll say, oh, this is something that's going to help you feel calmer in a few minutes. And the person takes it thinking that, and then a few minutes later, like, yeah, I know it's working. I feel calmer.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just the power of suggestion and the placebo. Yeah.
In fact, I mentioned Candace Pert. By the way, we talked about Pert, not you and I, but my sister-in-law, Yona, and I talked about it the week before you came on board. And Candace Pert was a researcher at Johns Hopkins University. She was actually one of the leaders there, and that's where she got her PhD, and she also was a major research chief at the National Institutes of Health. So she was, you know, a pretty big wig, so to speak. One of the things that she mentioned in passing in her book was the power of this kind of thing, of the placebo effect, of the power of the mind, the power of belief, power of, you know, what you think about. And as an example, she cited a study where there were flat-chested women whose breasts were just very, very small, who wanted to have larger breasts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there were drugs that were developed to enhance their breasts, and they even were able to show improvement beyond the placebo effect and so forth. Gave the drugs to these women, and almost to a woman, they just didn't do anything.
Huh.
And then they tried an experiment where they put the women under a hypnosis, and the hypnotist basically told them, from now on, your breasts are going to feel warmer, and they're going to feel tingly, and you're going to just feel them expand and so forth. And almost universally, their breasts got larger.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge. Well, I don't mean that. I said that the wrong way, didn't I? But it is a big thing to have that kind of an effect. That's really just remarkable. I mean, they actually had medications that were designed to produce that result that couldn't produce it as well as the post-hypnotic suggestion did.
Wow. Powerful.
It's very powerful. So, yeah, you have to get past the secret and look into other stuff before the secret starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think, anyway. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion on it. But they do spend a lot of time trying to lay the groundwork for the secret in Chapter 1. And I give them credit for that, because they're at least trying to provide a foundation that people can use to understand and appreciate what's going on with all this secret stuff, this law of attraction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, the greatest plaudit I can give on the book. I mean, now you said you had already been exposed to all this because of your exposure to Michael Bernard Beckwith. When you were reading the book or seeing the movie, I don't know what you did first. What was your first impression of the first chapter? Was it like, yeah, I got that, I'm moving on? Was it, I got something new out of it? How did it work for you?
I mean, it was a while ago, so I don't remember exactly, but from what I do remember, yeah, I resonated with it pretty well, you know, already.
So it's like, this is confirmation of what I've heard before from Beckwith.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was easy for you then. The first chapter wasn't the trauma it was for me.
No, it was not the trauma.
So that makes it easier for sure. No wonder you went into the field, I tell you.
But you also sound a lot more scientific than me. Like, I don't know, I personally don't necessarily have to go to all research and scientific places. Like, if something just kind of resonates with me and I trust that, then it's,
you just buy into it and you're ready. You're done. You're ready to move on to the next thing.
At least with Law of Attraction, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
There's one other thing that's interesting, too. Lisa Nichols, one of the presenters, makes a very interesting comment. And we could probably do an entire show on this comment, I think. She says, thank God that there's a time delay, that all of your thoughts don't come true instantly. We'd be in trouble if they did. The element of time delay serves you. It allows you to reassess, to think about what you want, and to make a new choice.
Yeah, Abraham Esther Hicks also says that. Like, she always says, you don't want everything at once. It would be way too much, way too hard. So
I think the
be thankful for the time delay.
If I remember correctly, the visual in the movie, there was a guy sitting in his living room, and he sees a picture of an elephant, and all of a sudden there's an elephant in the living room leaving elephant patties on the floor.
Yeah.
So I agree. I really don't want to have an elephant appear in my living room. On the other hand, there is something to the whole topic about time delay being a useful topic, I think. Because of what the nature of the time delay is. That was one of my questions.
Right.
When I first saw this, The Secret, I said, okay, well, I can see how a time delay would be an explanation about why it is things don't seem to happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the time delay? That's what I wanted to know. What causes it?
Mm-hmm. You
know, what makes time be delayed? And Dr. Joe Vitale, he stepped in next and he said, you want to be aware of your thoughts and choose your thoughts carefully, and you want to have fun with this because you are the masterpiece of your own life. You are the Michelangelo, the David. You are sculpting as you. And he said that in the context of trying to downplay the delay and not be too worried about the delay. That actually didn't work for me. I needed to understand that delay. I needed to understand why it happens.
See, but by doing that, though, then you're kind of keeping yourself in the delay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know that now.
Yeah.
And that's true. But we also have to remember that it's important to meet the student at the student's level. If all they really had to do was explain what the delay was caused by, and I would have been able to move past it.
Yeah, true. That's
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And if I had to put it, you tell me if you think this matches your understanding. The time delay is our resistance. The time delay is how much we resist whatever it is that we really think we're trying to attract. And how
that's exactly what I was going to say.
It is. Okay. Yeah. So we're on the same level here. Yeah.
And people have different resistance levels about different things. So the less resistance you have about money, the more you're going to start attracting money.
Right.
The rest, you know, the less resistance you have about attracting a relationship, the more the relationship's going to manifest.
Now, here's the real rub where the whole thing is concerned. When I first started exploring The Secret, I had resistances I didn't know existed.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
And I still have them. I'm still recognizing. They still emerge. I find new ones all the time. But when you're first exploring all this stuff and you aren't aware of your own resistances, that can be very confusing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can be really confusing because you're trying, you know, you're putting out, I want this, I want to attract this, I love having that, and it doesn't come to you, and you say, well, this doesn't work. Because you aren't aware of your own resistances.
Yeah.
That this is really important stuff. So I really think they need to spend more time on the resistances.
Yeah, and of course, the minute you in your mind go to, well, how or when is this going to happen?
Yeah, that in itself is resistance. Yeah, I know. It's like, here's resistance on top of the resistance.
That's right.
But you got to understand the concept, otherwise you can't begin to deal with it. If you you're a person who is naturally positive, a person who just throughout from the moment you were born, everything you looked at positively, then this stuff makes total sense to you. So when you're first presented with it, you're saying, well, yeah, of course. I can see why there'd be a time delay. I'm not worried about it. I'm just going to move on. No big deal.
Yeah.
If you don't have that background, though, and so many people don't, so many people are taught by our society, indirectly or directly, to be negative. So their experience is negativity, and they have a bunch of resistances built up. They need to know it's the resistances that's stopping things.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, too, from my own experiences and a lot of people I talk to, resistance, a lot of law of attraction information, you kind of get at deeper levels as time goes on. Like, you first think, oh, I understand that. And then, like, 6 months later, you're like, oh, now I get it even more. Now I really have. And then 6 months later, you go, oh, now I even get it more. It's like,
we fill in the gaps.
You kind of get it at deeper levels as time goes on.
Yeah, we fill in gaps in our information, and each little piece just adds to the feeling of understanding.
Yeah.
Like that's what I call the getting deeper. Getting deeper is really just filling in the gaps.
Well, even with resistance, like when I kind of similar to you, when I first heard it, I mean, I kind of understood it and I thought I did. And then, like, as time went on, like, I just had a better understanding and better, you know, and now I have a much better, clearer understanding of it than I did several years ago. So, and who knows, years from now, I may even have a better understanding.
Well, I'm sure you will, because
just,
as time goes on,
you kind of get it at deeper levels.
We learn through experience more and more and more different ways that we can offer up resistance. And so we start accumulating, like, this pile of information. Oh, wow, look at all the different ways it can happen.
Yeah.
Whereas when we start, it's like, well, yeah, I guess I can resist something somewhere.
Yeah, and then like, well, you know what I mean. I'm sure other people listening do too. You just get it more as time goes on.
Sure, because the more that you accumulate knowledge-wise, the more it starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
The more that,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, of course. Well, why didn't I notice that before? You
know? That's right. But thank God you notice it now, you know.
One of the things my sister-in-law, Yoona, and I talked about a number of times on this show was the role that our brain plays in filtering out experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that it does that. People who cannot filter out experiences are actually considered to have mental conditions, mental illness.
What do you mean filter out experiences? What do you mean by that?
We actually experience a lot more stuff than we recognize consciously.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
So, for instance, a classic example of that would be you go out and you buy a new car. And let's say you buy a Toyota. And all of a sudden, all the cars seem to be Toyotas.
Yeah.
Now, the Toyotas were always there.
Yeah.
But because your filtering didn't let them in, you didn't notice
them.
Another example is, this is kind of an inverse example. I want you to not see anything red. And as soon as I say that, the first thing you see is red. Because you start noticing red.
But your car example is so true, because when I got my latest car, I never heard of that model before.
Ah.
And then once I test drove it and heard of it, guess what? Suddenly I'm noticing them all over the place, and I never noticed them before.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So, yeah.
And in fact, people who are unable to filter stuff out because the filtering mechanism isn't filtering, we have a word for that. Autism. That's what autism is. From the perspective of an autistic person, they are inundated with so much sensory input that they can't handle it.
Wow.
It's really quite a thing.
They don't have that ability.
Because that key portion of their brain isn't functioning the way it's supposed to. So it's like the filter's missing. So that filter is actually critically important. It helps keep us sane. It helps us to navigate the world. But it also informs us that what we focus on tends to be what we what we let through the filter, and what we avoid focusing on tends to get filtered out. Which is both a positive thing in terms of not driving us crazy, but it's also a positive thing in terms of recognizing that we can change our experiences.
Yes.
Because all we have to do is change what we're focusing on, and that stuff starts coming through. And we can take our attention away from stuff we don't want, and that stuff stops coming through.
And from a law of attraction perspective, when we change what we're focusing on, then that change, suddenly other thoughts come in and more, you know, that support that.
That's right.
That better focus, and other thoughts come in. So, yeah, it's really
so this becomes the way to overcome resistance. You know, going back to the question of resistance, now that we understand what resistance is to some degree, how do we go about getting rid of it? Well, we get rid of it by changing what we focus on. In other words, we change the way we reprogram the way our filtering mechanism works. What it focuses on letting through, what it focuses on blocking out. And just by changing that, by sort of adjusting that, by deciding what we're going to pay attention to, we end up getting rid of the resistance.
Yeah, every time we focus more on what we want, we're knocking down that resistance. Every time we deliberately keep ourselves feeling good, we're knocking down resistance.
Right. And contrary, every time we focus on what we don't want, we build up the resistance.
We're building it up. Yep. Yep.
So that becomes our volume control.
Yeah, that's really important to get. Like anyone who is into law of attraction, you know, it's so important to get that we always want to be in as less of a resistance state as possible.
Well, I think that once you understand the resistance component, you get that part. The hard part is figuring out how do you do that? What's the practical way to do that?
And
that's why I like this whole idea.
One of our shows, we can talk about
because
I have many ways.
Well, that's why I said the whole time delay thing is a whole show. You could do probably 5 shows on it.
I want it now. I want everything now.
Oh, yeah. But the good thing is that since it is something that we can control through what we focus on, now at least we have a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there may be things I'm resistant to that I don't even know what they are.
Right, right.
Good news is I don't have to worry about that.
No.
Good news is I just changed my focus to what it is I want and deliberately pay attention whenever I'm focusing on something I don't want and say, oh, I did it again. Time to shift it over what I want. And do that over and over
and
again.
And then flip it. Yep, and then flip it to what you do want.
And the more that we do that, the more the resistance goes away.
Exactly.
And that's why it works for somebody like you, because you never worried about the resistance. It does, which is good. It's a very good thing.
Yeah. But I still had to know about it and understand it and figure out what to do to be less resistant anyway.
And to help other people to lose their resistance. Because you're a coach.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a big part of your
life.
That's
right. Yes. Yes. Yeah, resistance is a culprit.
It's a culprit, and it.
Yes.
It's where we feel like the universe is working against us when it's really just ourselves. Because I know I experienced that. I thought, before I discovered the secret, the law of attraction, I really thought there was, you know, some negative demon out there who was destroying my life.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife discovered it pretty early on and told me, no, it's not out there. It's inside you. What do you mean? I don't have any demons inside me. Well, they are demons in a sense. Resistance, in a sense, is a form of a demon. It basically blocks me from what it is I'm trying to get into my life.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's true. But in reality, it was within me, and and the good news is that it gives me the power. Because once I have the power, once I know what I need to do in order to make the change, first of all, I don't have to worry about the demon anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, I can actually feel empowered. Isn't that what the modern word is these days? Everybody wants to be more empowered. Empowerment.
Well, power is a good word. It is a good word.
We all want to feel empowered. We grow up in a society that disempowers us. So, of course, we hunger after it. Of course, we crave having more power, more direct influence over our own lives. And that's probably what makes The Secret so successful. Because
Absolutely. For
a lot of people, it was the first time that they realized they actually do have power over their own circumstances.
Yep. And that we can actually be a deliberate creator.
Yes.
We can. Like, we don't have to – we're not just victims to what happens.
That's right.
You know, we can take more control of it.
We can take work. We can we can basically move in all the directions we've always wanted to move in, but felt like somebody was going to block us.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
Once you know that the only person who can block you is you,
mm-hmm.
Now that's pretty empowering. Because that means that that evil boss can't block you, and that parent who's in your way can't block you, and that teacher who's giving you a hard time can't block you, and all the people mm-hmm. that we blame for blocking us, they can't block us anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate empowerment.
Yes, yes. And resistance is so important to understand and know what to do to reduce it.
So what's your favorite method for reducing resistance? In your life, I mean.
I guess for me, it's kind of what you talked about earlier, where when I do catch myself thinking about something in a more low vibration way or negative way, mm-hmm. is being aware enough to realize that, and then in the moment, flip it to what I do want. So, okay, David, well, what do you want about X? And then like legitimately forcing myself with my thoughts to focus on what I want. On what I want over whatever it was I was thinking about before that. And that really works. Like, when you really do it in the moment, it really, you can feel it in your body that you, like a relief. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, this feels much better.
Oh, yes. It's empowering, and it gives you an instant reaction. That's one thing we all want. We want to have that instant result.
Mm-hmm.
The instant result mm-hmm. is that you feel better. You know, just by practicing what Abraham Hicks calls the pivot. That's what you were describing mm-hmm. was the pivot. Just
absolutely.
You notice you thought about something negative, and you try to find the silver lining or the positive way to look at it. And when you do that especially the first time, you're like, oh, I finally did it. And then you do it the second or third time. It's like, okay, I'm getting a rhythm going here. This is good. You know?
Yes. And I just think that's one of the biggest differences of people who know about law of attraction and really know how to work with it compared to people that don't. It's not that necessarily you're always thinking positively and only wonderful things are happening for you, but it's the difference is that when something does happen or you do catch yourself thinking more negatively, that we know what to do about it in the moment, that we don't stay there.
Right, and that it's not a big deal that you have to go through. It's a little deal. It's just
exactly.
finding one silver lining. If you can find that one
exactly.
silver lining, it can be challenging to find that silver lining, particularly the first few times. But when you find it and you voice it, a few things happen. First of all, your negative friends find some way to make a negative again. and you start to notice that you're in a different space from them, which
mm-hmm.
is kind of weird all by
That's
itself,
right.
you know. But also,
That's right. and then,
but also it, when you first start turning it around like that, you feel like you're finally taking that control that we were talking about earlier.
Yes, yes. And like all the law of attraction information and processes, it just takes practice, 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 practice. And, the more you practice reducing resistance, the better you get at it.
And
the better you get at it, the more positive results you're going to have.
And that's basically life in a nutshell right there. Well, we only got a minute or so left. Let's do our wrap-up. First of all, I want to remind everybody that you can find us all the time here on PRN, of course. But you can also subscribe to our podcast at loatoday.net. We are on Apple iTunes. You can find us in the iTunes store. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Facebook. We Twitter our tweets periodically, too. So there's a lot of ways you can find us. And, David, for people who want your coaching, how do they reach you?
Sure. Anybody who's interested can go to lifecoachdavid.com, and they can read more about me. And if they're interested in coaching, they can find out how to contact me at lifecoachdavid.com.
Sounds great. David, we got chapter one out of the way. We'll be doing chapter two
Yay.
Next week. Are you looking forward to it?
Okay. I'm ready.
I'm psyched, too. So thank you once again for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having
me. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.